of the very general idea is to search for hidden symmetry structures in the standard model fermions. But the difference is that I'm also taking Lorentz group seriously, and I'm doing the game for one generation only. So these are the principal differences with the previous speaker. And some very general motivating remarks. So since Lorentz group is playing part in my story, therefore GR in some, because the Lorentz group is a symmetry, local symmetry and group of GR. So this is why I talk about GR here. And well, but of course it's not only GR, but all the theories we know now are most likely just effective field theories. In particular, GR is most likely just an effective field theory. And then the question is, how can we get hints if there is no guidance from the experiment? And then maybe it is sensible to search for hints in the structure of the existing series. And so this is the attempt in this direction. And actually, my story very naturally splits into two parts. In one part, I'll explain you some representation theory and present a rewriting of the free part of the standard model fermion Lagrangian. And the second part, and I don't know if I can cover the second part in 45 minutes, the second part is an attempt to say, so what? But at least I hope I will be able to explain you this representation theory. And so what I'm doing is rewriting, and suggestive analogies, these are the original Maxwell equations. And of course, we know that we can write them very compactly. If there are no sources, we can rewrite them very compactly. So I'm doing something very similar in spirit. I'm taking free part of the Lagrangian, of the fermion Lagrangian of the standard model, and suggest some very simple rewriting. As simple as that. And so, but to explain this rewriting, I could have simply stated this representation theory facts, but I also want you to explain one way to think about representation theory of orthogonal groups. This is a standard way of thinking about spinor representations of orthogonal groups. So I'll describe spinor representations of orthogonal groups as differential forms. As I said, this language is standard in the mathematical community. It's not very familiar to the physics community. In principle, one doesn't need to know this language to make the statements. But if you have the language, then you will be able to see these statements. You'll be able to see why they're true. So I thought this, teaching you the language is also useful. And well, so the orthogonal group that will play a role here is some real version of complexification of spin 14. So let me start by explaining you one representation theory statement. The statement is that if you have wild spinor representation of SO2n, and this part I'm doing over complex numbers. Remember, orthogonal groups of even dimensions have Weyl representations. They are half of the Dirac. And so if we take a Weyl representation and restrict it to some SO2k times SO2n minus k, embedded in the diagonal way into SO2n, this will split as Weyl spinor of both of these orthogonal groups, plus the Weyl spinor, plus the complex conjugate Weyl spinor, plus the Weyl spinor of opposite chiralities with respect to both. And so it is this statement that I want to start by explaining. But for that, I need to teach you some basics about spinor representations of orthogonal groups. And so as I already said, very concrete and very nice way of thinking about spinor representations of orthogonal groups is via differential forms, via, the previous speaker had lambda C5 on the blackboard. So it's very, very similar way of thinking. I'll present it very concretely. So, to realize spinor representations in this way, if you want to work over reals, then you need to be talking about split signature orthogonal group, spin NN. Of course, you can also do arbitrary spin 2n if you complexify everything. But this story most beautifully works over reals for split signature. So let's imagine we do split signature Clifford algebra, so in dimension n plus n, and then we can realize it very concretely. We take creation operators, which will act in the space of differential forms in n dimensions. Importantly, my Clifford algebra is 2n, but the differential forms I will take in half the dimension. And so there will be creation operators that add basic differential, basic one forms in each coordinate, and there will be annihilation operators removing them, so basically inserting the corresponding vector field. And then it's very easy to see that such creation annihilation operators satisfy this anti-commutational relation. And so on the right-hand side, we have an off-diagonal metric whose elements are, so we have something like 0, 1, 1, 0, and this is n times n dimensional identity matrix. This is clearly of split signature if you diagonalize it. So this is why what we've realized here is Clifford algebra of split signature. This gives, so if you take arbitrary powers of this now, you get the Clifford algebra NN, and if you take even powers of these generators, you get the corresponding spin NN. And importantly, we also see immediately a representation of both the Clifford algebra and the orthogonal group of spin NN. Namely, these operators and arbitrary powers of them, of course, act in the space of differential forms by adding and removing these basic differential forms. And then vial representations are clearly those of, so if you act in the space of all differential forms in dimension n, this is your Dirac representation, but it's clear that even powers of this cannot change the, well, they cannot map even to odd differential form. And so spin nn, which consists of all even, of all quadratic combinations of these generators, clearly preserves the parity of your differential form, so it maps even to even. And therefore, vial representation of spin NN is simply general, say, even or odd polyform in N dimensions. This is very concrete, and actually this is also a very nice way of doing calculations with spinners in of large orthogonal groups. So this is slide which tells you how to realize the Lie algebra of spin NN concretely in this way of thinking, or in this basis. Lie algebra becomes algebra of matrices, where on the diagonal you have GLN, and off diagonal you have antisymmetric matrices. So the spin NN splits as GLN, SON, SON. And then, again, very concretely, now that we think about our spinner as a polyform, the action of Lie algebra would be simply you wedge this polyform with a two-form, you insert another two-form into your polyform, and you do some GLN transformation on it. This formula is useful for explicit calculations. For example, when you have a spinner, this will be important later in the story if you take a particular spinner, which is a polyform, and you're interested in what is the stabilizer of the spinner. This is the type of calculus. You act with arbitrary Lie algebra element and determine the stabilizer from this formula. And let me present an example of SO22. Of course, SO22 is the same as SL2R cross SL2R, and the vial spinners are simply two-component real spinners in this case. And let's see how it all arises in this language. So in this case, we just have two pairs of these creation annihilation operators. As I said, full Lie algebra are just all possible quadratic operators. And here I already split them into two commuting sets. This is one of them, this is the other set. They have the standard SL2 commutational relations, as you can easily check. By knowing how these guys anti-commute. And then if you start acting on odd forms is dx1, dx2. You see that h, so one of these copies, one of the SL2-Lie algebras. It acts non-trivially on odd forms. The other one will act trivially on it because we have SL2R cos SL2R, and one of the spinors is representation of one SL2R. The other two-component spinor is representation of another SL2R. So this is what we see here. This copy will act on dx1, dx2 trivially, and the other copy, the non-trivial action, well, both dx1, dx2 are diagonal with respect to h, and e plus, e minus map one into another, as you expect. So this is all as you expect. Similarly, on even forms, this is all as you expect. So you get the expected SL2 cos SL2. And then you see that in this case, your two-component real spinors are even polyform and an odd polyform. This example will be useful for me when I talk about the Dirac operator. So with this information, let me come back to the statement I made in the beginning about the split of Weyl representation with respect to SO2s embedded into bigger. So imagine now we have spin 2n, we embed spin 2k, spin 2n minus k. We take a Weyl representation, for example, even degree polyform in n dimensions. Then we simply split coordinates. We realize this spin 2k as the one mixing k of the coordinates and the other one as acting on n minus k coordinates. And then clearly even differential forms in n dimensions split as odd times odd plus even times even. And this is Weyl with respect to spin 2n minus k times Weyl with respect to spin 2k plus Weyl of opposite chirality. Okay, so this is a very easy way of seeing the decomposition rule I started my talk with. Now, let me also explain how you can think about Dirac operator in this language. Again, this is something very nice. The way you realize Dirac operator, and of course this will be the Dirac operator in split signature, so maybe slightly unfamiliar one. Still, the way to realize it is you think about coefficient functions of your polyforms as depending on both. Remember, to realize my spinors as polyforms, I chose n of the coordinates as special. But I need to allow my coefficient functions to depend both on this special coordinates on x as well as on the other half x tilde. So imagine I do this. Then my Dirac operator is simply I differentiate with respect to x coordinates and then do Clifford multiplication of dx. So this is simply wedging dx. This is a polyform. I take a derivative, it remains to be a polyform, and I simply wedge with dx. But here I do something different. I differentiate with respect to x tilde and take a Clifford multiplication with respect to x tilde. But this simply inserts. So the Clifford multiplication here is the insertion of the vector field corresponding to the dual coordinate. So this is creation operators and this is the annihilation operators. So viewed in this way, Dirac operator becomes a version of the exterior derivative operator. What you do is just operation very, very similar to exterior differentiation. And again, you can convince yourself that this is this works. For the example of R22 spinners, and this is a calculation. So these are the two chiral Dirac operators. Remember, in four dimensions, the usual Dirac operator is a 4x4 matrix, and then you can represent it with two chiral Dirac operators of diagonal. So here I'm describing this chiral Dirac operators. Chiral Dirac operators map spinors of one helicity into spinors of another helicity. And if you write the metric in signature 2-2 in this diagonal way, then these are the chiral Dirac operators. But it's convenient to use the off-diagonal way of writing the metric, and then they become these 2x2 matrices. And then it's a very simple exercise to check that when you take the Dirac operator as I constructed it, as this version of exterior derivative operator, enact on the odd polyform. So for example, let me run through this calculation here. So I take a d on the first term. My alpha bar, I said, it depends on all four coordinates. I need to differentiate with respect to the first coordinate. This is what is done here, and take a wedge product with x1. This is what I've done there. And I don't need to differentiate with respect to second coordinate, because if I add dx2, there is a copy of dx2 already here, so this term is not there. And I also need to differentiate with respect to second coordinate tilde, because then I can insert the interior product with d by dx2. I can kill dx2, and this is this term. So this is the derivative with respect to second tilde coordinate. And you see, I've kind of added dx2 tilde, but dx2 tilde just killed dx2. So this is the result. And of course, it coincides with the Dirac operator, with the expected Dirac operator. So this prescription does work. Okay, now I will briefly remind you. Now I'll go to the standard model and briefly remind you the structure of spinners, spinner representations appearing in the standard model. So I think about all fermions in terms of two-component spinners. I hope this is not a problem. So the free, the kinetic terms of all the fermions are made of this, of kinetic terms for two-component spinners. And so the basic kinetic term for a two-component, single two-component spinner is this. So this is the Hermitian conjugate of a two-component spinner. Now these are Lorentz indices, Lorentz two-component spinner indices. This is my chiral Dirac operator and another two-component spinner. And in index three notations, this is this object. And then in standard model, every fermion is a two-component spinner, or well, maybe several two-component spinners. And then there is a big table of what fermions are there. Of course, they are all, so if you think about all fermions in terms of two-component spinners, then there are two-component spinners and they are Hermitian conjugates. And here I'm listing just the two-component spinners. There is 15 of them in single generation of the standard model. If you add right-handed neutrino, there will be 16 of them. And, well, so this must be familiar to all of the audience. Standard model Lagrangian, I also assume that it's familiar. Here is described in words. You just write every possible thing compatible with the symmetry. You add the Higgs, you add the vector bosons. Okay. And now let me remind you the SO10 structure of the one generation of fermions of the standard model. So to see SO10, to see that spinners arrange themselves in SO10 representations, we need to think about a lepton as a force scalar of quarks. Then we put the left doublets, SU2 doublets together. There are three colors, but we add the force color. And then we get SU4 acting on them and mixing them all. This is the SU4. And of course, there is also SU2, the weak SU2 acting there. And let's, as Patti Salam suggested, also add another SU2 symmetry. So let's put the weak SU2 singlets, let's put them together into doublets. We put up bar and down bar and right-handed neutrino and right-handed electron together into SU2 doublets. The usual SU2 doesn't act on them, but we add another copy of SU2 which mixes them. This is the SU2 right. And we also arrange these right-handed particles into a singlet, into fundamental representation of SU4. Then we get all the fermions transforming under SU2 left, SU2 right, SU4, which is the Patti-Salam gauge group. And the representations that appear are, it's a fundamental representation of SU2, trivial representation of SU2 right, times the fundamental of SU4. And in the right-handed sector, it's the trivial of SU2 left, fundamental of SU2 right, and anti-fundamental of SU4. And now the SL10 story becomes relevant because of, well, this very simple scheme of groups. One then notices that SU2, SU2 is basically SL4, SU4 is basically SL6, and then SL4 and SL6 together, they sit diagonally in SL10. And then if we take a single vial spin-off SL10, and remember that it will split us vial of this times vial of this plus the other chirality, we exactly get the spinner content of the standard model. So single complex vial representation of SL10 will contain all 16 particles. These are, well, all the 16 particles in this table here. All my left, all my two component spinners, there's 16 of them in one generation of the standard model. If you add the right-handed neutrino, they all become just components of a single vial representation of SL10. So again, I'm hoping this is familiar. And then to continue with my story, now the idea is to think about the Lorentz group. We add Lorentz group into the picture. So, so far, we've ignored, in this SL10 story, we've ignored the spinner index, the two-component spinner index. So, so far, these spinners have arranged themselves as, it's a big, big object, which has the SL10 spinner index, the 16-dimensional spinner index, and this just goes over all the 16 copies of two-component spinners in one generation of the standard model, but it also has the spinner index, the two-component Lorentz spinner index. And so this is, this spinner right now is a vial of SO10 as well as vial of SO13. But we know that, and of course, there are also the complex conjugate spinners there in the Lagrangian of the standard model, right? Because the Lagrangian of the standard model involves the two-component spinner as well as its complex conjugate. So we have these objects plus their complex conjugates in the Lagrangian. But the idea is that we can again run the same representation theory statement that if you have vial times vial plus vial times vial of opposite chirality, they together sit in a bigger vial representation. And so one of course observes that if you take, let's first run this story over complex numbers. If you take the complexified Lorentz group times complexified SO10, you put them inside SO14, the representation theory works out correctly. You get vial times vial plus the opposite chirality. And of course, this has been known for ages, these representation theory facts, and we don't have a theory based on these facts because of obvious difficulties of writing any dynamics based on this representation theory. So, I will come back to these questions of dynamics later on, but of course, I just want to give a word of warning that what I'm describing is not new at all. This has been known for many years. So some more information about this way of putting spinners together, putting fermions together. What I described for SO14C works for complexified spinners. Now we need to select the real form which corresponds to the real functions present in the Lagrangian of the standard model. And we'll see that this will select just two possible real forms of SO14. So if I go back here, in the Lagrangian of a standard model, my two-component spinners that are present there is 16 times two complex functions plus their complex conjugates. So overall, there are 64 real-valued functions in one generation of the standard model. I want these 64 to remain, 64 real-valued functions to to remain at the end. And so this is the reason why I need to choose a real form of SO14. In general, if I take a wrong real form of SO14C, my vowel representation will be complex, and it will be 64-dimensional complex representation. The only two real forms that give me a 64 real dimensional vowel representation are these two. The condition that you need is that the signature is 0 mod 8. So you either have the split signature 7-7 or SO11-3. These are the only two real forms that work. This is the way the Lorentz group together with Wood group sits together into these bigger orthogonal groups. So here, this option 11-3 SO10 group sits inside, but inside SO77 only SO64 sits. You cannot, of course, fit the full SO10 here. You put here indefinite signature orthogonal group. And so one statement that we have already is that if you take one of these pseudo-orthogonal groups and look at the vowel representation of them, then all components of one generation of the standard model fit inside. Let me also write a Lagrangian. This is the promised rewriting of the Lagrangian of the standard model.
Could I just make sure that I have the right statement on the previous slide? So if we take either of those two has a Majorana vowel representation.
Yes.
And in either case, if you break it down to SO3 comma 1 times SO6 times SO4, we get the same representation.
Yeah, you get, same representations. Of course, I'm splitting these groups down to Patisalam.
Right.
Both this and this. And then the statement is that, yes, you get the same content, the same Patisalam representations times the two component spinners as required for the standard model and nothing else. Okay. Then let's try to write down the Lagrangian that realizes. As I promised, I'll only be able to do trivial rewriting in the sense that I'll only write the free part, just the kinetic terms of the fermions. So how does it work? The general idea is, of course, to start with RNN and write the vowel Lagrangian in RNN. So you have a vowel spinner, this chiral Dirac operator, the other vowel spinner. There is the inner product, which is spin, appropriate spin group in the end. So the idea is that if you write such a vowel Lagrangian and then do dimensional reduction to 3 plus 1, ignoring the dependence on other 10 coordinates, then this Lagrangian will split into correct fermion kinetic terms. This is a statement that I want to make. You can verify it by explicit computation, but also this statement is not surprising because if you start with bigger Dirac Lagrangians in more dimensions and then do dimensional reduction, you do get Dirac Lagrangians in lower dimensions. So this is the known phenomenon. What is surprising here is that if we try to see when we can write such a vowel Lagrangian, we'll see some very interesting restrictions. So let me run over this story. So first of all, the way the story goes is that this is a vowel spinner, not a Dirac spinner, right? Now, we realize this as an even or odd polyform in n dimensions. This is another even or odd, so let's say both are odd, but then together they form an even form. And my inner product, inner product is basically just wedge product with some involution taken and then restriction to the top form in n dimensions. And you, because of this, you immediately see that because this Dirac operator maps even into odd, such a vowel Lagrangian can only be written for odd n, right? Because this is even, together this is always even, this increases it by one, so necessarily it must be an odd dimension. And then another fact you notice is that if your odd n is wrong, then this Lagrangian will be trivial by integration by parts. And what happens here is similar to, so in three dimensions, you can write ADA. This is part of Chern-Simons action, and this is non-trivial. In seven dimensions, you can write CDC, and again, this is non-trivial. But this object in five dimensions, BDB, is trivial. It's a total divergence by integration by parts. This is a total divergence. So this is why the generalization of this statement to polyforms is that n must be, 1 mod 4. So such a Lagrangian will only exist in three, so this is the case of SO33, and this is the case of SO77, but 5-5 case, there is no wild Lagrangian. This is already interesting. It tells us that there is some selection procedure for such Lagrangians. And I will later provide another fact that selects, there is another mathematical fact that tells you that 7-7 case is special.
If you had taken 11,3, you would have also been able to write down.
It would be okay, yes. Yeah, it would be okay. So, for example, one can decide, just as an exercise, to work out what happens in 3 plus 3 dimensions. And in this case, the representation theory works out. So you take the product of Lorentz times the commuting part, what commutes inside SO33 with Lorentz, which is U1. And then you find that 3 plus 3 dimensional vial Lagrangian just reduces to single electrically charged vial fermion in 3 plus 3. It's actually a very simple computation to do. Okay, and another interesting fact is that where is chirality and where is complexity comes in, because I'm taking real, so I'm taking Majorana vial representation of this big orthogonal group. So where is chirality coming from? Well, the chirality always comes from the fact that the representations of this guy are chiral. So when I restrict the representations of Lorentz group times whatever commutes with it, because this was a real representation of the whole group, and the representations of this are complex, the representations of this group will also be always complex. So you get chiral fermions in this story all the time, automatically. Because you start from real, but it's a product of complex times necessarily complex. Okay, so my rewriting of the standard model free fermionic Lagrangian is this. You take integral of R14, you take vial Lagrangian in R14 of appropriate signature, and then you dimensionally reduce, you get all the right fermion kinetic terms. And So this finishes the first half of the story, and I don't know how much time do I have?
Another 15 minutes.
So I'll try to run over the second part of the story, trying to explain what this story that I presented so far suggests. So what I want to do is now a little bit unconventional in the sense that I want to assume now that there is some mechanism that gives my spinners of the standard model a vacuum expectation value, or rather that there is some bilinear constructed from them that is non-trivial in vacuum. The reason why I want to assume that is that if my quantum fermions acquire vacuum, non-trivial vacuum expectation value, then I can describe this vacuum by a classical spinner. And then, so basically I want to assume that there is a classical spinner, a generic classical spinner of my SO77 that is non-zero. And this spinner of SO77 will break symmetry. And because it breaks symmetry, this is interesting because, well, we know that, of course, the true symmetry group that appears is smaller than this. So we need some mechanism of breaking symmetry. So the type of mechanism of breaking symmetry that I want to And this edge here is, I want to break symmetry by taking the spinner to be non-trivial. And then there are some special facts, mathematical facts about orthogonal groups that can be stated when one plays this game. So imagine, let's consider the action of orthogonal group on its Weyl spinner representation. Dimension of orthogonal groups grows as n squared. Dimension of the Weyl representation grows exponentially. It's 2 to the power n. For lower representations, orthogonal group will be smaller than the spinner representation. Sorry, it will be bigger. Yeah, the orthogonal groups will be bigger than the spinner representation, but for large enough n, your Weyl representations will be bigger. And then one can ask the question, when is it, for which n does it happen that, well, one crosses over from one region to another? We're interested in, as I said, in low enough n for which the orthogonal group is bigger than the spinner representation, because in this case, when you act on your spinner representation, there will be non-trivial stabilizer. If this group is smaller than your Weyl representation, then you will act and all possible actions. There will be no break in your symmetry. So we're interested in this case. And then one can immediately make a statement that the last case when this is true, when your orthogonal group is bigger than the Weyl representation, is exactly n equal to 7. So for S of 14. So this is one case that is special about the standard model suggested orthogonal group. And this is a simple count for n equal to 7. The dimension of orthogonal group is 91. Dimension of Weyl is 64. But for n equal 8, the dimensions already go in a different. The Weyl representation is bigger. And so we get a very, for small enough groups, we get interesting symmetry breaking patterns for low enough n. Let me describe this symmetry breaking pattern. This is a computation. Well, I first do the computation for SO3-3, but the result here is not very interesting. So this slide presents the computation. The way you do the computation is you take a polyform, odd polyform, act with a general Lie algebra element, and then you read off explicitly what the stabilizer is. But I can skip this computation and just tell you the result for SO7-7. The resulting stabilizer groups are of three possible types. This is either G2 cross G2, which is a compact real form of G2, or G2 cross G2 with a split real form appears, or G2 complexified. And why is this? Well, first of all, this exceptional Lie algebra of G2 appears, but why is this interesting? There is also the statement that intersection of two G2s is SU3. Well, this is a computation, but at the end of the day, you see that, well, maybe I can explain this statement a little better. So you take an odd form, which is a polyform in 7 dimensions, Jan-Mills Lagrangian for some SO7-7 gauge fields, this would be obviously wrong. So this is why I'm not doing it here. So the ideology is, it's a representation theory with many, many special properties. Let's see where it leads us.
When you have indefinite many time components,
yes,
you might have problem with causality if you make sense of the big space.
Yes.
After reduction, of course, you get the usual thing, but you start with,
yes,
an integral or 14-dimensional space.
So, yes.
Is there, so these are the two problems. But the one with unitarity, I do think that is a serious problem, because you also had as an internal symmetry SO6,4.
Yes.
And for internal symmetry, you have a non-compact group.
Yeah, but it will get broken. It will get broken to compact gauge groups.
It, I mean, SO10 is also broken, but it makes sense even as a kind of unified
of course, I acknowledge this is a standard problem that is usually mentioned in this context, but as I said again, representation theory leads you in a certain direction, and I think I'm happy to go in this direction as far as possible till I see that something goes obviously wrong. If you do standard things in this scenario, of course things go wrong. But I think this representation theory suggests that one can do something non-standard here.
Okay, so we will have more discussion after YouTube. Yes. Maybe you want to have like one more short question?
I'm just really quick anyway. In the dimensions where your vial action is trivial, is there some alternative action you could have taken?
No. Well, yeah, if you take Dirac fermions, then yeah, you can write more actions. But in this restrict context of vial spinners, you cannot write anything else.
Okay, so we will continue in the afternoon with the discussion. And now we will have a break, let's say, until 10 past.